ever get that feeling? Like you stumble upon a place and you just know, you can practically feel the weight of its history. You know, like every corner has a story to tell.
Oh, absolutely.
That's how I felt when I really started digging into Genoa.
Interesting.
I was reading about its maritime history. And honestly, some of these old maps of Genoa's port during its heyday, stunning.
I can see that.
And it really got me thinking, what was it about this one city that gave rise to so much ambition, so much influence, spanning centuries, really?
Well, to really grasp Genoa's impact, you kind of have to start with its location. Think about it geographically for a second.
Right.
You've got this prime piece of the Italian coastline right there on the Ligurian Sea.
Prime Mediterranean real estate.
Exactly. But more than just a pretty view, Genoa was strategically vital. It was a crossroads.
Okay, I'm with you so far. So we're talking about more than just a harbor town, right?
Oh, way more. Yeah. Think of it this way. The Mediterranean, back then, it was the information superhighway. Trade routes, cultural exchange, you name it. And Genoa was right in the thick of it for centuries.
So this incredible mix of people, ideas, goods, it all had to flow through there.
Precisely. It's really no coincidence that some real movers and shakers came out of that environment. Driven, innovative.
Which brings us to, well, I got to bring up Niccolo Paganini, right?
The violinist.
Yeah. Even if you don't know the name off the top of your head, you've heard his music. This is the violin virtuoso. Like the rock star of the romantic era. And I mean that literally.
He had that reputation for sure.
Oh yeah, larger than life. Even today, centuries later, you hear the whispers. People saying he was so good, so far beyond normal human ability, it must have been some deal with the devil.
Right, a little supernatural help never hurts.
Right.
But no, seriously, the guy was insanely talented. There's no denying that.
Okay, but it wasn't just for show, right? I mean, it's one thing to put on a theatrical performance.
No, Paganini's technique was the real deal. Even other violinists were floored.
Oh, I can imagine.
He was doing things no one had really done before. Like, imagine this. Insanely fast passages, but on one string. Or these harmonics that sounded totally otherworldly.
It's one thing to read that, another to actually hear it.
And don't forget, this is the Romantic era. Everything's about pushing emotional limits, going big.
A little bit of darkness and drama.
Exactly. And Paganini, whether he meant to or not, he embodied that spirit.
So we're seeing this pattern, this drive to push boundaries. And it really comes through with another famous son of Genoa, Christopher Columbus.
Can't talk about Genoa without Columbus.
Right. And look, it'd be wrong not to mention the very complicated legacy of his voyages, especially from the perspective of the people he met in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
But just for a moment, let's put on our Genoa colored glasses, yeah.
Okay.
They're fiercely proud of this guy, even though he was sailing for Spain. What do you think that says about how Genoa sees itself?
It's a great question. There's this boldness there, right? Like, they know they're a player on the world stage. And remember, this is a city built on trade. On venturing into the unknown.
Making their own way.
Exactly. So in a way, Columbus, even with all the complications, he represents that.
And it's interesting you say venturing into the unknown, because, and I think a lot of people forget this, Columbus wasn't just out there to prove the world was round. There was something else driving him, a much grander vision.
Oh, absolutely. What he really wanted was a faster trade route to the east, to those legendary lands of spices and riches.
That's right. He was looking for a shortcut.
Exactly. And his big idea, sailing west to reach the east, which, by the way, seems totally obvious now back then, that was radical. And those ideas, they were shaped by the intellectual circles he was running in back in Genoa. The merchants, the scholars, those debates, they were happening in Genoa.
So you've got this city, right? It's producing explorers, musical geniuses who might quite literally be in league with the devil. I mean, things are clearly cooking in Genoa.
Yeah, it's quite a mix.
But where things get really interesting, at least for me, is when you look at the fight for Italian unification.
Oh, absolutely. Pivotal time.
Because Genoa gives us not one, but two major players in that whole drama. Giuseppe Mazzini and Giuseppe Garibaldi.
And then, study in contrasts.
Yeah. I was going to say, for anyone who needs a little refresher course on their 19th century Italian history.
Yeah.
Imagine Italy.
Before it was Italy.
Exactly. Not the country we know and love today.
Yeah.
Back then, it was basically a patchwork of different states, right? And a lot of them controlled by foreign powers.
Yeah, it was messy.
It was a mess. So unifying all that, huge E deal. Fired up the whole peninsula. So you got these two guys. First, you've got Mazzini. Right.
Be mind. the intellectual powerhouse.
Okay, so he's the brains of the operation.
In a lot of ways, it's his writing that really had an impact, especially when he wrote about this idea of young Italy, and those weren't just your average political pamphlets either. You know?
So we're talking next-level propaganda here.
Absolutely. They were infused with this romantic vision, almost poetic, really, of what Italy could be. Unified, free from foreign powers, a democracy.
So he's laying the groundwork, getting people to buy into this vision. But how do you actually make that happen? I mean, you've got these empires, right? They're basically playing Risk with the Italian peninsula.
Yeah, no, it wasn't going to be easy. And that's where Garibaldi comes in. This is our man of action.
The muscle, you might say.
Exactly. Garibaldi was charismatic. He could rally people to the cause. And man, he was not afraid of a fight. So it was this really interesting partnership when you think about it.
Okay, so it's like Mazzini's got the blueprint, gets everyone fired up for the idea.
Yeah.
Garibaldi's the one to actually go out and, you know, make it happen.
Perfect way to put it. And Garibaldi was a brilliant strategist, too, not just some general sitting back, giving orders.
No, this guy was on the front lines, right? I mean, wasn't there that one military campaign he led?
Yeah.
Almost impossible odds.
You're talking about the Expedition of the Thousand. Stuff of legends.
Yeah, that's the one. It sounds like something out of a movie. What was it, like 1,000 guys against an army?
Basically, they sailed from Genoa to Sicily, this small, really poorly equipped volunteer army going up against forces that outnumbered and outgunned them by a mile.
So how did they even stand a chance?
That's the thing about Garibaldi. He was just that inspiring of a leader. And they had the fire of this shared dream, this belief that they could actually pull it off.
And they did.
They did. Against all odds, it's what made him a legend, those victories. I mean, you hear the stories, daring escapes, uniting people under this one cause. It's no wonder he's still such a huge figure in the whole story of Italian unification.
See, this is what I love about history. You read about these figures in a textbook and they seem, I don't know, almost untouchable?
Larger than life.
Yeah, but then you really dig in and realize these are just people.
Mm-hmm.
Ambitious, flawed, driven. They bled, they fought, they wrote their way into the history books.
For better or for worse, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder, though, who else deserves a little more spotlight?
Yeah.
Figures who might not get their own operas written about them or statues in every piazza.
Right. Hidden figures all throughout history.
And speaking of which, our deep dive today actually gives us two more names. The Doria family, specifically Andrea Doria. And then there's this guy, Guglielmo Imbriaco.
Interesting cases, both of them.
Right. And I'll be honest, when I first saw those names, I drew a total blank. Not exactly household names, at least not for me.
See, but that's part of what I love about these dives. We get to unearth these people who are hugely important, but maybe not getting the attention of a Columbus or a Paganini.
Shine a light on the lesser knowns.
Exactly. So Andrea Doria first. To really understand his deal, gotta zoom out to 16th century Italy.
Okay, setting the stage.
And things are complicated, as always. You've got all these powerful city-states, Genoa included. They're constantly fighting to stay independent, to grab more power.
It's all about survival.
And the Dorias. They were already a big deal in Genoa. Wealthy, influential, the whole nine yards. But Andrea, he took it to a whole other level.
Born to lead.
Pretty much. Brilliant naval strategist. And he knew that if Genoa was going to stay free, it needed a killer navy.
Makes sense. Control the seas, control your own destiny. Although, I'm guessing keeping Genoa free probably had a different meaning back then, right? I mean, we're not talking about a democracy here.
Good point. Free, in this sense, more like independent. Specifically independent from being controlled by other states.
Okay, so not exactly handing out I voted stickers.
Not quite. Genoa had this republican system, but it was the elite families who really held the reins. And the Dorias, they were basically calling the shots.
And that is where things get really interesting. So he was basically playing 4D chess, huh?
Mm.
While everyone else was stuck on checkers. Some high-stakes diplomacy.
Yeah.
But I got to ask, how do you even make those kinds of decisions? I mean, with the fate of your entire city riding on your every move.
Well, that's why they called him Andrea Doria and not host speaker, I guess. But no, really, he understood power. You know,
like on another level.
Yeah, like he was playing the long game. He knew that sometimes to protect Genoa, to keep it independent, he had to work within the system, even if it meant getting in bed with some unsavory characters.
The enemy of my enemy and all that.
Exactly. And honestly, that's still something we struggle with today, isn't it? How to navigate a messy world, balance your own ideals with, you know, the reality on the ground.
Yeah, those lines can get blurry real fast. It's a timeless dilemma for sure.
Whether you're running a city-state in the 16th century or, well, let's just say the world is full of tough choices.
Right. No easy answers. Speaking of which, we got to talk about Guglielmo Embriaco, our other, shall we say, less celebrated Genoese figure. You mentioned he was mixed up in the whole Crusades era.
Up to his eyeballs.
See, that whole chapter of history, it feels like, I don't know, shrouded in myth and legend.
Oh, absolutely. It's got it all, right? Knights, epic battles, quests for holy relics.
And this guy, Embriaco, he's right in the thick of it.
Front and center. So picture this. Genoa is at the height of its power, right? And the Crusades kick off. And it's not just like, oh yeah, we should probably send a ship. This was a deeply religious age. Faith was intertwined with politics, warfare, everything.
A total power move, getting those brawny points with the Almighty.
Exactly. So Embriaco steps up as one of the key leaders for the Genoese forces in the First Crusade.
So we're talking like full-on knights in shining armor, charging into the Holy Land, clashing swords with Saracens.
The whole nine yards. And Embriaco, he wasn't just there to make up the numbers. He played a key role in capturing Jerusalem itself.
Wow. Wait, yeah. Seriously?
Yep. Which, by the way, at the time, absolutely massive news, sent shockwaves through medieval Europe.
I mean, yeah, capturing Jerusalem, that's like the ultimate prize.
And it's what he brought back from Jerusalem that really makes his story interesting.
Okay, got a bite. What kind of souvenirs are we talking here? I mean, when you conquer Jerusalem, you got to up your gift-giving game.
Oh, this is way better than a snow globe. Legend has it that among the treasures that returned with him was a relic, and not just any relic.
You can't just drop the R word and not elaborate.
Right. All right, so this relic, it was believed to be a piece of the true cross.
Whoa. As in the true cross. The one.
The one and only. The one Jesus was crucified on.
Yeah. That's heavy.
Yeah.
Talk about a potent symbol. And that ended up in Genoa.
It did. And it became a symbol for the city piety, power, this direct link to one of Christianity's most sacred events. I mean, you talk about a power move, right?
No kidding. And to think, a piece of history like that, it still exists today, right there in Genoa. It really makes you think about those threads connecting the past to the present. It's not so distant after all. Well, this has been quite a journey. From rock star violinists to daring explorers, from revolutionaries to holy relics, I think it's safe to say Genoa knows how to leave its mark on the world.
That's what I love about a place like Genoa. And about history itself, right? Influence, impact.
Yeah.
It isn't always about these grand conquests or global domination. Sometimes it's about ideas, how a place can cultivate creativity, that ambition, over centuries. So when you think about Genoa, don't just think about the glories of its past, you know? Think about what stories they're writing right now, what legacy they're building for the future. Who knows what other hidden figures are out there just waiting to be discovered, right?
That's what I love about these deep dives. You always come away with more questions than answers. But hey, that's half the fun, right? Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and who knows, maybe you'll uncover a hidden corner of history that's just waiting to be found.